Okay, everybody. So welcome to the Sunday program. It's good to see you. So what we're going to do this evening is have a continuation of our class from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because I thought that would be very important for everyone to see, because every evening at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard, Eastern Daylight Time, depending on what we're following, we have a class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita from 5 to 6 every evening. And if you're interested in joining it and hearing the link, or getting the link, just see from the shop, which at Krishna Priya's place. So I thought this particular section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that we're reading right now has information about Srila Rupa Goswami's lessons that he's getting from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, is Krishna himself, who appeared 500 years ago, actually more than 500 years. I keep saying 500 years, and I've been saying that for the last 50 years. So, more than 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And he appeared to teach the Yuga Dharma. Of course, the Yuga Dharma is Krishna Nama Sankirtan, the chanting of Krishna's holy names. And in order to properly chant the holy names, one has to understand the science of Krishna consciousness, the science of God consciousness. Of course, there's no hard and fast rules for chanting the holy names like we have with Vedic rules. Like Vedic rules, things like Gayatri have to be said at a certain time of the day, and other mantras are said at certain times. And then we recently had a wonderful eclipse. Everybody's heard of eclipses before? And eclipses are considered very inauspicious because that means the world's coming to an end. Anyway, they're very, right after the eclipse, we had this new virus come out, variant of the virus, right? Omicron. So it was the Omicron eclipse. So this different thing, it's true, came out right after that in South Africa. So there's different auspicious and inauspicious things that occur in this world. For example, if a deer crosses the road on the right side, it means one thing. If a deer hits your car, it's very inauspicious. We have one devotee here who a deer has hit his car a number of times. Anyway, Gopal. And so anyway, there's different auspicious and inauspicious things in this world, but the chanting of Hare Krishna is always auspicious, Niyamina Tishtam. But there are certain things that we should understand in order to perfect our chanting. And these things are like things to be avoided, like the 10 offenses, and also the finer points of bhakti, the goal of bhakti, because if you don't understand what the goal is, you're not going to get there. Just like if you put your GPS out of the car and you don't know, you just say to the GPS, of course, my car, I can talk to the GPS. So, and it says, where do you want to go? And I said, I don't know, but I want to go there. And GPS will probably say, I can't understand what you're saying. And so you got to say, I want to go to Marsville, whatever address I'm going to. So in the same way, we have to know our destination. What's going to happen at the destination? There's like sometimes we go to people's homes for programs on Friday night, Saturday night. And I said, what time does everything start? And of course, they tell me everything starts at 5:30, but actually it starts at 6:30. This IST, which is different than Eastern Daylight Time, Eastern Standard Time is Indian Standard Time. So that's the way I calculate. They tell me it starts at 5. Okay, I'll be there at 6:30 when everything starts. So, in other words, you gotta really know what's gonna happen at the destination, when it's gonna happen, what to look out for. Like, that's prasadam, that's what you look out for. And what not to look out for. So, in other words, that's why we have these instructions. It is, chanting Hare Krishna is everything. That's true. But there's other things that are important to understand, like so you can gauge your level of advancement, what you got to do at each level of advancement. And also there's another thing called pancharatriki vidhi, which means you have to have certain types of sadhana. We worship the deities, you know, regulated activities, etc. So anyway, don't want to get too complicated. So this is what we're reading now, basically about the goal of Krishna consciousness. And in this particular part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a discussion of what we call the different rasas of the spiritual world. Now, ras means taste. So there's different tastes of relationships. The relationships are basically five different types of relationships. And just about every relationship you have in this world is of one of those different categories. You know, Shantaras means peaceful, like neutral, like it's a neutral ras. Peaceful, of course, in relationship to Krishna means you understand how great Krishna is. As they say in Christianity, our Father out in heaven, give us this day our daily bread. Or in India, give us this day our daily galabjamans or jalebis or things like that. You got to be culturally sensitive. So that's like Shantaras. You don't do anything. It's just God is the supplier, you know. Here he is, you know. Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari, Swami Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Please give a new car to me, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari. And I will offer my car to you, but I'll take it away right after I offer it to you. This is like sometimes people come to the temple and say, I'd like to offer my car to Krishna. I said, great, you need a new car. And they said, no, that's not what I meant. I want you to bless the car, touch the wheels, you know, the lotus feet wheels, the car, whatever. And so that's Shantaras, you know. Or as it says, don't ask what you can do for God, ask what God can do for you. Of course, that's the opposite we should be thinking. And then after that, there's Dasharas. Dasharas means servitude, you know, then you really get into the nectar, because that's our constitutional position, to serve God, isn't it? That's our, we're serving anyway, we're serving, we have a choice. We can serve God, or we can serve our senses, you know, serve the tongue, the belly, the eyes, all the different senses we can serve. We travel around the world, go see the Eiffel Tower, kind of useless anyway. I've seen it. We go travel, see the Harbour Bridge in Sydney, kind of useless. But, yeah, that's what we're serving our eyes or the tongue. One day we want Chinese food, the next we'll eat Japanese food, the next day, whatever, Indian food, the next day, pizza, right? So we're serving, so instead, but then this type of service doesn't give us satisfaction. Satisfaction comes from serving from the heart, serving Krishna. So anyway, so, and then after that, the higher ras after that is Sakya ras, where one becomes the friend of Krishna. Krishna's your friend. I mean, he's the best friend to have, because, I mean, who has such a cool friend as Krishna? Yeah. He's the best musician, most attractive person, etc. Anyway, and then Arjuna is actually a good example of a friend of Krishna. And Arjuna would sometimes sit on the, or lay on the same bed with Krishna, and they'd wrestle, they'd joke around, slap each other in the back. Can you imagine slapping Krishna on the back? And say, Krishna, you know, you're just too much for me. So, and then higher than that is the parental relationship, Vatsalya, where one becomes, has the feeling that Krishna is dependent on the person. So that's, and even higher, of course, the conjugal rasa. So you have these five different rasas, which pretty much describes all the rasas, all the direct relationships in this world, as well as in the spiritual world, because this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And then you have seven indirect rasas, which flavor the direct rasas. The seven indirect rasas are things like adbhuta, that is, you know, shock, oh, wonderment, actually wonderment to be more precise, or humor, or chivalry, or even fear. You may say, you know, what's the enjoyment of fear? Well, that's why people go to amusement parks and they go on roller coasters so they can be afraid, right? Isn't it? I mean, I remember the last time I was afraid, the police were stopping me for speeding. And it wasn't enjoyable, I tell you that. I looked at my watch that monitors my heartbeat, and it was skipping. I said, oh my God, maybe I need to get a defibrillator or something like that. So there's a certain enjoyment of fear. There's an enjoyment of humor. Humor, of course, is very, very enjoyable. And so we mix all these different rasas together and we get enjoyment, and that enjoyment's there in the spiritual world. That's what's being described in this part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So let's chant Jai Radha Madhava before I take the whole class with the introduction. We're going to be reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, 19th chapter of the Madhyalila, I believe beginning with, let me just look, text 213. And of course, we're online every evening, and we have people watching on my Zoom. We have people watching on YouTube simultaneously, and also on my Facebook page simultaneously. So we got quite a few people every evening on Zoom. We have anywhere between 20 to 50 people every evening, and Facebook about similar number, and YouTube they watch generally later. So it's quite a big audience every evening. It's exactly at this time, except when I'm traveling. Okay, so we'll chant a little bit. Jai Radha Madhava Kunyabhiha
Nana Prajajaranjana. Yes, sir.
Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, ISKCON founder Acharya. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya, Nanda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jaya, Namacharya Srila Vairas Thakur ki jaya, Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha, Srivasati Gaur Vakta Vrinda ki jaya, Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopikopanath Saya Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan ki jaya, Vrinda Vrinda ki jaya. Maturanam Kajaya, Tekata Sami Kajaya, Yubunamai Kajaya, Shimati Kalasi Devi Kajaya, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindi Kajaya, Go, Primananda, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kajaya, Go, Primananda, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Mastar, Guru, Shimati Bhakta Padanti Swami. Days of Raspati Devi. Gauravani Pacharni Nivashesha Srinivani Paschacha Dejatari Omaganati Nandasha Gananjana Shilakya Chakshur Un Meditam Yena Tasma Shigaveda Maha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So now we'll go on to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You're going to be able to follow along on the screen there, as will everybody else. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda
So a reading from text 213 in the Madhulila, chapter 19. And we'll read and then we'll comment at the same time. So we just keep reading until we comment a little bit, and then at the end we'll take questions from all of you, and also we take questions in the chat window from the many people who are watching. So I'll just do the Bengali, and I'll read the translation and Srila Prabhupada's purport. Shamo manishtata bhudher dhamindriya samyamha titiksha dukha sammarsho jivo pashtadeo dhritihi. The words Shama, or Shantaras, indicates that one is attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. Dhamma means controlling the senses and not being deviated from the Lord's service. Endurance of unhappiness is ditiksha, and dhriti means controlling the tongue and the genitals. So, read Srila Prabhupada's purport, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about that. This verse is from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.36. The conditioned soul under the clutches of Maya, the material energy, is very much agitated by the urges of the tongue and the genitals. Control of the urges of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, which are situated in a straight line, is called dhriti. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, dharma deity huayati, lobamani sudravati. Those who are in the Krishna conscious movement will understand that as part of the prasadam prayer. Among the senses, the tongue is the most formidable enemy of the conditioned soul. Urged by the tongue, one commits many sinful activities. Although Krishna has given human beings nice food, people still commit sins by killing poor animals for the satisfaction of the tongue. Not being able to control the tongue, the conditioned soul eats more than he needs. Of course, everyone must eat to keep the body fit for the Lord's service, but when one cannot control the senses, he falls victim to the dictations of the tongue and the belly. Naturally, genital agitation follows when one seeks illicit sex. However, if one is fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna, he can control the tongue. Bhaktivinoda Thakur further states, Krishna bodha doya moi, kodivada jiva joy, swapasadana velo vai. You'll recognize that too. In order to conquer the tongue, Krishna has been very merciful and given us nice food that has been offered to him. When a person is attached to Krishna's lotus feet, he does not eat anything not offered to Krishna. Sayan Amrita Kal, Radha Krishna Gunagao Prema Dako, Chaitanya Natai. Since a devotee eats only prasadam, he conquers the dictations of the tongue, belly, and genitals. One can control the dictates of the senses when situated in the position of Shantaras, then one's advancement in Krishna consciousness is assured. So I think I need to talk about this. Because as we mentioned before, Shantaras is actually the beginning stage of spiritual life. The word shanta means the peaceful ras. Just like we have the word shanti, om shanti, shanti, shanti. One should be very, very peaceful. So one is only peaceful when one can control pushings. For example, if one is surrounded by people, I mean, I'll give you an example when I was young. I guess I'll use my mother, who's not listening. Hopefully she's not listening. When my mother would push me in different ways, using sometimes guilt trips, any of you people know what that is? That if you really loved me, you would do this. If you were really a good son, you would do that. And so there's all this pushing. You got to do this, you got to do that, you got to become a doctor. And I said, I want to be a Hare Krishna. I said, no, you got to be a doctor. So when you're surrounded by people who are pushing you to do different things, you can't be peaceful, can you? So when you're surrounded by your senses that are pushing you, how can you be peaceful? So the whole point of yoga is indriya samyam. Yama means to control. Like you have the principles of yoga, yam, niyama, right? Asana, pratyahara, prachahara. Asana, pranayam, prachahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. So the same thing. The whole point, according to even Patanjali, he says, is to control the senses so you'll be peaceful. And not only will you be peaceful, because that's Shantaras, not only will you be peaceful, but you won't be doing things that are vikarmic. Now here, animal killing is specifically mentioned by Srila Prabhupada. Now, this is very much appropriate in today's world to talk about animal killing. Why am I saying it's very much appropriate? Because we're talking about viruses. Oh my God. What do viruses have to do with animal killing? Am I not supposed to kill viruses? Are viruses nice people? I don't know. But the point is that the viruses that we're experiencing today started out from animals. And so did the Spanish flu that killed millions and millions of people, and so did AIDS, and so did all sorts of variety of different pandemics, epidemics, and things like that started out from the killing of animals. So it's a very heavy karma, because the disease, and you know, the disease of the animals actually jumps to human beings when the animals are being in close quarters with the human beings and the animals are not being taken care of properly and they're actually crammed up like chickens are crammed up or whatever animals we may be talking about. So that's one aspect, but karma is actually far deeper than that. Because when you kill an animal, then you also have to suffer that same sort of interaction in the future. In other words, you'll kill and you'll be killed. Or like Newton's law, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. So how can one stop the killing of animals? And also, the argument is, but you are killing, you Hare Krishnas are killing what? Vegetables. So when you kill vegetables, I mean, of course, there's quite a bit of difference in the violence that's entailed in cutting down some broccoli. I've never had a piece of broccoli run away from me as I was harvesting it. Or scream. Maybe it was screaming. But besides that, yes, there is karma for eating vegetables, too. There's karma for doing almost anything. Not almost, for doing anything in this world. Just like in India, you have the Jains, and they wear the mask because they don't want to breathe in bugs, right? And they don't want to hurt bugs, which is actually a good attitude. You know, I praise them for that. But at the same time, right after wearing their mask, they'll get in their car and start the engine. And when you start the engine, guess what happens? How many bugs get inhaled? Of course, inhale is a human term, but absorbed in the engine. So you can't avoid some sort of interaction or harming living entities. You walk on your grass or whatever you're doing, you can't avoid that. So what do you do? Whatever you do, there's karma, right? Unless what you're doing, especially your food, you're offering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you're serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and then the karma is no longer there. The karma becomes eradicated, and especially when you chant Krishna's name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Especially when you chant Krishna's name, then the karma becomes eradicated. But you can't use that as an excuse to go on committing more vikarmic activities, then chant, and then do more karmic activities, then chant. That's like an elephant bathing, the example is given in the Bhagavatam. Then an elephant goes into the water, and after it comes out of the water, it throws dust on itself. Now there's a reason for that, which I'm not going to get into right now. But in any case, just you cannot become free from your karmic reactions just by chanting unless you change your activities. You can't use the chanting to serve you. That's one of the offenses on chanting the Lord's holy name. But if you actually take up spiritual life and you offer your food to Krishna, as Krishna says in the Gita, Yat kurasi yadasnasi yasyahoshi didasi yat yatapashasi kanti yatat kurushua marapanam, that everything you do, everything you offer should be done unto me, then you become free from karma. And also Krishna says in the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, sarvadharmam prachacham amekam sharanam vraja, aham tvam sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami masaja, free you from all this entanglement. Because naturally, you do have to harm some living entities just living in this world, just breathing in this world, just driving your car in this world, unless you've got an electric car. No, still, those poor electrons. So whatever you do, you're subject to that law of karma, unless you engage in spiritual life. And engagement in spiritual life doesn't mean, you know, becoming a sannyasi like me, which is kind of impractical for everybody except for me. So engagement in spiritual life means that you do all your activities for Krishna. Wait, you can do business. We were just talking to some devotees before the class about doing business for Krishna. And or you can be an artist for Krishna. Or you can be a musician for Krishna. Or you can be a manager for Krishna. Or you can manage a temple for Krishna. Or you can take care of your family for Krishna, right? These are all different things you do for Krishna. So it's a very practical thing. And then you become free of this karma. So then the question arises, how do you control these different pushing elements in the body? Of course, we just talked about controlling the tongue, which is only eating food offered to Krishna. But beyond that, even if you eat food offered to Krishna and you eat too much, it creates havoc in one's ability to control the senses. If you eat a ton, and you're not an elephant, then you get agitated. You can eat prasadam sweets, and your mind will still be agitated. You could still get prasadam diabetes. My diabetes is from prasadam, it's virtual. Right? You can still get prasadam diabetes. But so you really have to, as Krishna says in the Gita, not eat too much, not eat too little, not sleep too much or sleep too little. It's an inside joke I have with some people here. So, mityahara viharasya. Take the middle path. Even in Buddhism, Buddha understood that, the middle path. First he tried the eating too much path, and he almost died, if you know the history of Buddhism. And Buddha was an incarnation of Krishna, and that didn't work, so he decided on the middle path. So, but how does one do it? It's really hard. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable of all the senses. It does other things other than eat. It talks too. Well, the mouth talks, tongue vibrates. But but we're using it in a sort of metaphorical sense. Obviously, no one's ever seen a talking tongue, except in a comic or something like that. But the tongue is used for talking. And so, how do you control these things? How do you do it? Actually, I'll give you the answer. First of all, you have to have a purpose. Just like if you have a purpose, let's say you're going to the university. We have some students here going to the university. And their purpose is to what? To do well at the university. I don't know why they want to do well. Anyway, so the purpose is, many of the students go to the university, the purpose is just get out of there and get on with life. And they're just thinking, I'm just like, just doing this until I get on with my real life later on. And then they get married and they think, I'm just doing this until I get on with my real life. And then they're raising their children thinking, I'm just doing this until I get on with my real life. And then they're retired and playing golf, I'm just doing this until I get on with my real life. And then they pass away. So let's say one is highly motivated to do well in school, in the university. I haven't found anyone like that yet. But anyway, so let's say someone is highly motivated to get all A's. What's the source of their motivation? Their parents, usually. I went to the university, my mother said, my son would never get less than an A. Any grade that's there, it's less than an A, is not my son's grade. The teacher must be in Maya. So that was a big impetus, And then also, I get paid for each A, too. That was a good impetus. You get paid for each A, nothing for B, minus for C. So try that for motivation. I'm not suggesting that. So let's say one is motivated, really highly motivated, focused. As Krishna says in the second chapter of the Gita, ekeha kurunandana, referring to spiritual life, but let's just apply this to the material sphere. But one is very focused on achieving something. It's like a horse in a race. I don't know if you've ever seen horse races, but I haven't, but I know about this. The horse, they put blinders on. Why that? Because they don't want the horse to see the other horse on the side. What a nice looking horse. Of course they're all males or females. I understand that. They don't mix the male horses with the female horses, or else you have trouble in the horse races. But they have blinders on, so they're just like looking to the goal. And because they're looking to the goal, they're motivated. and then everything else becomes out of focus. It's like, if you ever studied photography, some of you might have studied photography, there's something called a bouquet. We're not talking about a bouquet of flowers that you give to your beloved, that you gave to your wife before he got married, not afterwards. We're talking about... That's a standard thing. Like he said, you never give me flowers anymore. What do you want? Flowers are for Krishna. So bouquet in photography parlance means when you focus on something, when you used to have these big lenses, you would focus on something and everything else would be out of focus. You could do that now with software on the cameras, on the phones too. So that's called bokeh. So you actually, when you focus on your goal, what you want, then in Sanskrit that's called sankalpa, of course. Then really the other things are not so important anymore. When you really have something you really want, you could, even materially, you can really work for it day and night. And then you can give up your eating and sleeping and friends and everything like that. But unfortunately, most people, even materially in this world, are bohushaktas tranantascha. Their intelligence is many branched. They say, I don't know what I want. You know, they bounce from one thing to another. So in order to control these different factors, especially the tongue, and connected to the tongue is the other senses we just discussed, then one needs to have a goal, a reason for doing that. Or when one's chanting Krishna's name, we talk about chanting attentively, you need a reason to do that. I call that the why factor. We all know how to chant. We also know where we're going to chant, but we don't know why we're chanting. And so when you have this why factor, then it's easy to control, or easier. People say, that's easy for you to say. But anyway, I always get that excuse when I tell people, you should do this, and they say, that's easy for you to say. It's easy to say, that's true. But not easy to do. But then it's much easier to control the eating. Just like, you know, I knew I was going to give a class today. So I didn't eat too much, because if I ate too much and ate too many sweets before class, I wouldn't be lucid. You know, sure, I wanted to eat everything. Bishanam. But I know. So, or I control my diet because I know I want to serve Krishna. I have this goal. So that's a really important point in controlling the senses. And another point is, described by Krishna in the Gita, what is it, raso vajram rasya pesha, param drishtari vartate, that you get a higher taste. You're enjoying yourself so much doing something. Just like when a child is engaged in playing video games. Anyone here play video games? Any kids? No, they won't admit. So when someone's playing video games, they just don't notice anything else. I have a friend that went over in Australia, went over to his house one time. I was staying at his house, and I arrived from an overseas trip. And his son, who I know very well, is playing video games. And I come in Australia, this is 2 or 3 years ago, come in Australia, you know, with my bags and everything, carrying the bags, and his son's sitting there with the computer. Doesn't even know I exist. It's just, hello. Are you there? So because he's having such a good time, well, I'm not saying it's a good time, but he's so absorbed and he's thinking he's having such a good time that automatically the other things like eating or greeting a guest or even seeing a sannyasi and getting some punya, it's not so important. You know, he's from an Indian family too, so obviously, so he should know about these things. But so absorbed, because he's enjoying. So that's Krishna consciousness. That's the reason we can actually be happy, not only peaceful. Tushanti cha, ramanti cha. Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. Does anyone know that verse? Machita. What? Can you give me the translation? Yes. Not only great pleasure, what else happens?
Krishna dwells in their heart.
No. Tushanti. What is Tushanti?
They're satisfied.
They're satisfied and they are happy. Tushanti cha, romanti cha. They're satisfied and happy. So, in this way, it's easy to control these things. And then one has freedom then. Krishna in the Gita talks about the regulative principles of freedom. Like we have our four regulative principles, you know, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no eating. So if I explain this to people sometimes at the university, we have these four regulative principles. Oh my God. Why can't we be free? This is like, oh, this is slavery, you know. Know this, know that, know that. Prabhupada said we have so many do nots or donuts. Donuts. Anyway, you understand play of words. So, but it gives you freedom. Just by following those four things in chanting, you have freedom. I mean, I can tell you, I've never had so much freedom in my whole life. That I can focus my mind, I can do what I want to do, and I don't have to go to university anymore. So anyway. I don't have to listen to my mother anymore. Oh, so forgive me for that one. So, but it's very blissful to know that you cannot be controlled by other people's guilt trips, to know that you're not controlled by your tongue, your belly, your genitals. You can do what you want. And what you want, and you know what you want too. What you want to do is serve Krishna. Because that makes you happy. So just like in my life, I'm doing what I want to do 24 hours a day. And my tongue isn't telling me what to do. Pretty good, isn't it? So that's Krishna consciousness, freedom. So we're offering you freedom. And if you don't follow those four regulated principles, you get bad karma and there's no freedom. And you control the tongue. Atakshi Krishna Namadi, Nambavet Grahamindriyai, Seva Mukehi Jivado, Swayam Evas Parachita. Now another point about the tongue before I go into the next verse, because I just recited a verse that Rupa Goswami composed, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Graham Indriyai, that one can't perceive the spiritual reality with their material senses. But the methodology for perceiving the spiritual reality, and this goes beyond the freedom that I just mentioned, the methodology for experiencing the spiritual reality is Takshi Krishna Namadi Nabhave Grayam Indriyai, Indriyai means senses, but Seva Mukehi Jivado, if one begins to serve with the tongue. Because in spiritual life, the two most important senses are the tongue and what other sense?
Ears.
And the two first processes of devotional service are Shravanam and Kirtanam. So if you use your ears to hear about Krishna, and the interesting thing about the ears, as described by Kapiladeva, Lord Kapiladeva, in Srimad Bhagavatam, is that the ears are directly connected to the heart. I mean, we experience that in this world. When we listen to some music, it goes right to the heart, doesn't it? Like if you listen to what, punk music? Anyone here listen to punk music? Yeah, we have someone in the back. I won't point them out. Punk music or some Bollywood music? No? Do you know what Bollywood music is?
Yes.
Innocent young man. So then, you know, you listen to some Bollywood music, like romantic. Bollywood music is like romantic music. You know, people have romances in the middle of the Bombay railway station. Which is, I mean, have you ever been to the Bombay railway station, Mumbai railway station? It's probably the least romantic place you could be in the three worlds. Just, I mean, I can't think of how someone would be able to think of romance and, you know, keep their nose clipped all the time. So you hear the music, and immediately it's like that. You start jiving. Sorry. And then it affects the consciousness. You know, sound vibration even materially affects the consciousness. It's really interesting. I mean, just like all this false propaganda you hear on the, well, you don't hear, that's on the, in the media right now, people's consciousness is becoming affected. I mean, Hitler used that. He was very expert in using, you know, repeating the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, and actually affecting people's consciousness with certain modes of nature, with certain ideas, concepts, hate, and everything like that. So sound is very, very powerful. I mean, of course, that's why Prabhupada stressed very much the distribution of literature, because that's sound vibration when people read it, at least sound in the heart, in the mind. And so spiritually, sound vibration enters also from the ear to the heart. Lord Kapiladev talks about this. What is this Sanskrit? Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana katatra joshanadasho bhavarga bhartmani shredha rithir bhakti anukramashati. So what happens? It goes from the ear to the heart, and it alleviates the misery in this material world. And one gradually gets shredha rithir bhakti of faith, taste, and ultimately love from the sound vibration that goes into the ear. Also in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth verse in the first chapter, Nivritta Tarsharu Vigyamana Babalshira Shotrapit Mano Viraman Kautama Shloka Gunanavada Puman Virajeta Vinaposhutnan. Anyone know the verse? No. I'm embarrassed. So it means that if you hear about Krishna, transcendental subject matters, then So what it does is it alleviates all the vritta tarshar, all the miseries of this material world. And so that's our process, to hear. And then once you hear, then you speak. And when you speak, that evokes or attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and you get special mercy. As Krishna says in the Gita, no one is more dear to me than he or she who teaches this Bhagavad Gita to others. So these are the two processes, and thereby you control the tongue. So the tongue is not only just control. That would be bad if you just like controlled it. But you got to do something with it. And what you do is you glorify Krishna, you chant Krishna's name, you talk about things related with Krishna, and in that way, this way you'll get liberated. So that's how you control the tongue. So all these senses that are mentioned here, I should go through this further. Tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. Of course, that's in reference to Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, who has this verse describing these. All of these things can be employed in Krishna's service. And by doing so, one gets purified. So, that was today's talk. So does anyone have any questions, either online or in person? We only covered one verse, but that's what we usually do on Sunday. Other days we cover anywhere between 10 to 20 verses. Anybody have any questions about anything I said? Raise your hand or type in the... Yes?
So Maharaj, regarding Shanta Rasa, I don't know if I heard you say that's the beginning Rasa.
Yeah.
I may have incorrectly read that it's also a Rasa in the spiritual world. So there are people who think that's their eternal Rasa. Did I read that correctly? Or is that
that's an interesting question. Thank you for asking that question, Drew. That Shantaras is actually, pure Shantaras is not in the spiritual world. But Shantaras mixed with a little of servitude is. Previously in this chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that pure Shantaras is not quite spiritual. It's like on the borderline between spiritual and material. Why is that? Because the nature of the soul, and we are all souls, is servitude. Jivera Svarupa Hoi Nitya Krishna Das. So unless one is established in their nature, one will not be stable. One will not be satisfied. So the Shantaras, which just involves understanding the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is not one's constitutional position unless it is mixed with some servitude. And to give you specific examples of that, let's take the trees in the spiritual world. The trees in the spiritual world are Shantaras. However, they're also rendering service with their shade, with their fruit, and other things like that. Because the constitutional position, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Svarupa Hoi Nitya Krishna Das, is to be a servant. And in this world, we are servants of our senses, we're servants of other people, we're servants of the government, we're servants of our mind, we're servants of some philosophy. So we can't avoid that constitutional nature. But in this world, that constitutional nature is expressed in a perverted way rather than its pure way. So yes, and anyway, that's a very good question. That is a question oftentimes people ask. So you can have Shantaras in the spiritual world, but it has to have some mixture of servitude there. But primarily Shantaras. I mean, just like you have the four, now we're getting a little technical, you have the four Kumaras who are Shantaras devotees, yet they're also rendering service, but their primary focus is Shantaras. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we're getting a little technical here, because in the spiritual world you have all these different relationships, and everyone has an eternal relationship which they have forgotten at the present time. And the question is to reawaken that relationship, and that relationship is reawakened by the chanting of Krishna's name. It's just like if one is sleeping, and I use this example oftentimes. If one is sleeping, you forget about who you are oftentimes when you're sleeping. You may think that you're an animal or a bird flying through the air, or you know, I have many dreams that I'm still in the university. And my test is tomorrow. This shows how traumatic it is to go to the university. I dream that, oh my God, my test in nuclear physics is tomorrow, and I still don't know how to make an atom bomb. So, it's not quite that bad. Almost. So, but then I wake up, oh thank God, I'm not in college anymore. Oh, thank God I'm in the Hare Krishna movement. Phew, what a relief. So that's like wake up in the morning. Some people have a lot of trouble waking up in the morning. It takes them like 4 hours to wake up to discover who they are. So we have to get them alarm clocks, you know, speaking alarm clocks. You are a devotee. You are, you know, whatever. Your guru's name is Pure Krishna Gosa. Like that. So it's like waking up in the morning or coming out of a situation with amnesia. So the chanting is like that, by sound vibration. Like we wake people up in the morning by sound vibration. Sometimes you shine a light in their face, sometimes you stick some food in their mouth, but generally, generally, you do some sound vibration, and that wakes them up. So the sound vibration of the chanting of Hare Krishna, Cheto Dorpanam Arjuna Bhava Mahadvagmi Nirapanam, it cleanses the heart. So one says, wow, I'm a coward boy in the spiritual world. I'm a, whatever, a, I don't want to say gopi, but I'm... I am a servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. Wow! And I thought it's like waking up out of the simulation hypothesis, or the, for those of you who've seen the movie, The Matrix. I said, wow, that's who I am. And all along I was thinking I was an American. I was thinking that I was someone's son or someone's daughter. I was thinking I was white or black. I was thinking I was male or female. I was thinking I was a human being. I was thinking I was, what else? Can I think of any other ones? Rich or poor. I was identifying with this thing, this body. And you see that this even happens. I mean, a typical example of identifying with the body is that if you get into a certain type of car, your consciousness changes. It is amazing, isn't it? I mean, just like I have one of my friends who has a fancy car, I get in the car, and I feel like $1 million. And then I get into my car, which is a Toyota Prius, and I feel like, you know, what am I doing with this human form of life? So when you, because we identify with our external machine that we're carrying around, and it's such a relief not to identify with it. Because what happens with a car? It breaks down. What happens with the body? It breaks down. Right? What's that?
Planned obsolescence.
Planned obsolescence. That's what happens with your iPhone, too, that you're so attached with. Because with iPhones, you just get the latest one. Right? And then, instead of iPhone, it's iPad. So, or someone else paid, you paid. If you haven't had nice parents. So, but you just get another one. So it's this body is like that too, you know. It's such a relief to understand who you are. Wow, I'm Krishna's servant. I'm a cowboy, I'm a gopi, I'm this, wow. And then you live your whole life understanding that. And you're no longer attached to things in this world that are definitely going down because of entropy. Okay. There was a question online, which I think you could all see. Actually, two questions. Someone says, I have no idea what you're talking about. That was Gopal. You can see that. He has some trouble in spiritual life. Hare Krishna Maharaj, we cannot be any better than our best. That's right. I may understand and want to be a pure devotee, but my conditioning restricts me to achieve that goal. No, it doesn't. Actually, the only thing that restricts us is our desire. Because the conditioning, we know from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Cheto Darpanam Arjunam, it cleanses the heart of all the dust. It cleanses the heart of all this conditioning, of all the impressions. So, this is really... Anyway, so nothing. There's no impediment to being Krishna consciousness except, you know, our own desire. If you just got to take responsibility. Question? Yes. The desire is shaped by our association. Yes, it's true. It's shaped by conditioning, but we can choose association. As Krishna says in the Gita, karnam guna sangasya sadasa janma jonishu. By what we have the sangha, you know, basically sangha, or, of course, there's a better verse for that, sarva sangha sarvasvata sadha. Sangha, sarvashastra, koi, lava mantra, sarvasangha, sarvasiddhi. By good association, one can achieve perfection in an instant. Yeah, association, we can associate with the modes of nature. We choose our association. You know, I can choose what type of music I listen to. I can choose who I hang out with, right? I can choose what type of food I eat. I can choose so many. I have that free will. And that association changes my intention, my desire. I mean, my experience was when I first met Srila Prabhupada in 1971, that my desire changed completely when I first came in contact with 1971, Prabhupada walked in the room and that was it. I can definitely say it was love at first sight. And I said that I recognized who Prabhupada was, I decided to associate with him, and then whatever I am today is due to association with Prabhupada, either through body or Vapu, through his physical presence when he was present, or his instructions, his mission, his service. And by that association, one's consciousness, one's desire changes. It's really amazing. It's like a miracle. It's really a miracle. Okay. Yes, conditioning doesn't restrict you. So any other questions or comments before we end? Actually, it's time to end. So there's prasadam now, and that's to help us control the tongue. But think of it, the main thing is to think of your goal. What is your purpose in life? And really something important, you know, important purpose, not just to live for the sake of living or whatever, but some ultimate purpose to help people, to transcend the problems of this world, to transcend birth and death, to understand what life is all about. I mean, these are important points. As the Vedanta Sutra says, Tato Brahma Jigyasa. Tato Brahma Jigyasa means now is the time to look for the absolute truth, the absolute or the ultimate goal. That's the important thing. All right. So thank you very much. And you're all welcome to listen to our classes every day on YouTube or on Zoom. That are all glorious to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Okay.